Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's guest, Dr. Jeffrey Bland. This is part two of our discussion with him about his new book, The Disease Delusion. It's a great book. It sums up his entire philosophy, and it also points to a new direction that promises to be very exciting for those of us who practice complementary and alternative medicine. Jeff, you've been involved in some really interesting projects looking at genetics and the relationship between genetic markers and different lifestyle factors. So it may, I mean, what we envision in the future, you know, you are actually one of the people who virtually coined the term nutrigenomics, the study of genes and how it relates to dietary recommendations. But we may also foresee a day when our genetics can predict which supplements we might benefit from, which types of diets, which types of exercise programs, or are we very susceptible to stress. It's going to be an exciting and challenging time.
Absolutely. I think, Ron, we're on the cusp of a revolution that is equivalent in its impact on health as was the revolution that occurred at the turn of the last century with the discovery that infectious organisms can cause disease. And that was, as you know, such a major turning point in the health history, medical history of civilization that we saw within a period of just a few decades, the mean average life expectancy rise almost 30 years as a consequence of people understanding that organisms, these little bugs, these microscopic organisms, bacteria and viruses could disease. And I think we're seeing that same kind of revolutionary thinking emerging now as it relates to the power that lies within our genes and how we can unleash that to create good health. And the reason for it is very simple, and that is when we started into, when I say we, I mean the collective plural we, the scientific community, started into deciphering the code of life in the human genome, it was anticipated that what we would learn is that there would be certain genes for individual diseases. So we'd have a gene for this disease and a gene for that disease, and by understanding the gene that caused the disease, that we could then develop a drug to treat that particular problem, and we would cure all these diseases. Well, either fortunately or unfortunately, depending upon your perspective, that is not what turned out. What turned out was that there were not specific single genes that caused these diseases that are the major causes of illness today and constitute over 75% of our healthcare expenditures, which are those of the chronic diseases like diabetes, dementia, heart disease, arthritis, and so forth. There are a myriad of different genes that don't code for the specific disease. What they do is they code for the response of that individual to their environment that give rise to their function. And if the genes of that individual responds to their own individual chosen environment in such a way that it seemed to be hostile, to be seen as an invader or seen to be as a foreigner, then what the body does is it does what it's supposed to do. It responds vigorously and aggressively to try to fight back against that foreigner or that invader. And that's called chronic illness, that over time, it causes the body to be the innocent bystander, and it starts to be injured by the body's own response to what it considers to be a foreign invasion. That is a very, very different model of disease from that of a bug causes a disease, like a pneumococcus bacteria causes pneumonia, or a tuberculin bacteria causes tuberculosis. In this case, it's not just one bug caused one disease for which one pill will treat it. It is a genetic characteristic of the person, their strengths and weaknesses, that when put into the right environment will lead to high-level health, but when put into the wrong environment for their genes, then responds by producing a response that actually is that it causes innocent bystander injury to the body that we call disease. So what's this going to mean for us? What it means, as the cost of genetic analysis has come down significantly, such that we see within the next couple of years the whole genome being able to be analyzed, our whole book of life being able to analyze for less than $1,000. By the way, the first human genome was analyzed for over $2 billion cost.
Yeah.
This one will be coming up in a few years to the individual at less than $1,000. This will be the cost of just a normal expensive lab test. Everyone will have their human genome, when I say everyone, the bulk of people will have their human genome analyzed. It'll be on a little chip they'll carry around with them. And we will learn what strengths and weaknesses their particular genome incorporates. That'll help us to be able to understand where they might be sensitive to certain things in their diet or their environment, whether they're a hot reactor to certain chemicals or certain drugs, whether they are a person that might be better with an exercise program that's more built on muscle strengthening exercises versus long distance aerobic exercises, whether they are a hot reactor to various types of stress and they need to be involved with a different type of stress management program. This information, which is locked deep into our genome, will be exposed, and it will help us to basically start designing individualized programs. And I'm not talking about sci-fi 50 years in the future. I'm talking about within the measurable time within our life, the next few years. And you might say, well, I don't have the patience to wait a few years. What do I do right now? Well, that's what we've tried to do in the disease delusion, is to say, okay, in the absence of having all this information completely understood and analyzed, how can you access that which is available today using certain information tools that are actually free, called questionnaires, and certain questions that you would ask, because the questions we ask about ourselves determine the answers we get. So this first step along the journey of accessing this extraordinary new revolution is just basically asking different kinds of questions that we read from our body, which is what I've tried to do in Disease Delusion, to get people to start down this journey that's going to be a revolution in the way that we empower our health.
Well, there are some pitfalls, however, in genetic testing, because sometimes the information is scary. Sometimes the information that is given back in a computer algorithm, you know, you send away for 23andMe and they say, well, you have a high risk of this, that, and the other thing, and all it does is get you depressed. And then they had their ticket pulled by the FDA because it was thought that this was dispensing medical advice without proper interpretation. So what do you think the role of the health care practitioner is going to be in the future to help guide people and interpret this?
Well, I think that's an excellent question. First of all, I believe that the way that the whole use of genetic testing is being applied today is incorrect. I think what's happening is it's becoming kind of a fear-based system that is tied to what medicine has been. It's searching for the disease. It's a disease-focused system. It's not mm-hmm. a healthcare system. Locked within our genes actually is a message of health. We should turn this thing entirely around. Rather than talking about disease risk, we should be talking about health attributes. In our genes are health attributes, not just disease risk. And how many people are talking about the positive things that result in our genes, that if we go our strengths rather than our weaknesses, will give us good health and function for 90 or 100 years of living. I think that the whole model that we're using genes now is based on an old model called pathology. It's a fear model, it's disease-based, and it doesn't really give any kind of enlightenment as to how we mobilize and activate that which is our God-given goodness of good health, which also resides in our genes. So to me, we're going to see a whole paradigm shift in how this information is used, how it's language, how it's applied, and how people can be in love with their genetic strengths rather than fearful of their genetic weaknesses.
Well, that's a great message, because, you know, you get sometimes feedback on these genetic tests, and it's all about, you know, stroke, heart attack, dementia, and some people say, I just as soon not know.
Yeah, and I think we have to ask a question, where does that kind of logic and mentality come from? It comes from the fact that we do not have a healthcare system presently. We have a disease care system. So everything is disease-focused. And why is it disease-focused? Because that's where all the money is. That's where the big reimbursement
True.
Is. The more that you can do something strange to treat a disease, the more you'll be paid. And really, the action for our future is not just in disease treatment. It's in health promotion, individualized health programs. That's what disease delusion is all about. That's why I use the term delusion. Disease takes us into a blind alley. It's a fear-based model. You can't do anything about it. You just wait till your number's pulled, then you hope someone's going to rescue you. The other model, which is a health promotion model, is individualize your strengths, maximize your strengths against your susceptibilities, and live healthy for decades of high-level living.
It's kind of a very sophisticated type of health coaching. You know, terrific athletes with fantastic aptitudes still need coaches. You know, for every LeBron James, there's been a succession of coaches who have accentuated his strengths and brought about his stardom. And similarly, we can do this with disease. The problem is that, you know, as you said, our economic model is very much geared towards, quote, preventive medicine. But what preventive medicine means, oh, you've got high cholesterol, take a statin. Oh, you've got osteopenia, begin taking a bisphosphonate drug. Oh, you've got early signs of dementia. Now we have a drug for you. And ka-ching, 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 all the way to the bank.
Yeah, I think you said it again very well, that this model is all internally consistent to a disease-based philosophy. And we can easily turn this around because of what we've learned over the last 20 years. We have had a revolution in thinking about where the origin of disease comes from. It's not a bump in the night that occurs magically. It comes as a consequence of the mismatch between our own individual lifestyles and environment and that of our genes. Once we have that empowerment to know that we have this information available, we can do something about it, it makes the fear of disease a lot less important. It makes the opportunity of enlightenment for good health a lot more important. And that's what the disease delusion is all about, is trying to get people to understand we have the tools available today to beat back and reduce this really epidemic, pandemic of chronic disease, so that we could beat back 50% of that overnight if we just empower and use the information we have today. We don't need any new discoveries. It's already there. We just have to use these discoveries to really individualize our approach to life and get the benefit for 90 or 100 years of good living.
Well, it sounds very optimistic, but in this current system, sometimes the economic forces are stacked up against you. You've been involved very much, not just as a researcher, but also as an ambassador of this style of healthcare, often hobnobbing with people at high levels, executives and people in the insurance and pharmaceutical enterprise, trying to promote this model. Is there actual interest in establishing this as kind of a counterforce to our current rampage towards drugs and high-tech medical interventions?
I think the answer is yes, and it's for a very logical reason. It's not just the academic reason that we're discovering the origin of chronic illness, and so let's philanthropically do something about it. I think it's also economically driven that we can't afford this very, very expensive crisis-based medicine that's ever-inflating and using the emergency room as a primary care medical delivery system. It just is not going to be successful in either reducing the burden of disease, improving people's health, or reducing the cost. And so what's going on right now is really an economic driver. You see it in the Affordable Health Care Act, these new trends to push more responsibility back to the consumer for their health and to engage more in prevention and to try to start at least down the road of saying, if we wait till it's broken and try to fix it, it's going to be too late and too expensive. You can't treat dementia once you get to stage 2 or 3 Alzheimer's effectively. There's going to be no drug that's going to treat effectively Alzheimer's. You've got to get earlier in the model. You've got to use less expensive technologies, and you've got to have a team to do it. And they need to be reimbursed in a way of making a living to provide those services. That is the trend that's happening right now. Everybody recognizes it's the emperor with no clothes. It's a gorilla in the corner, whatever model you want to use. And it is changing overnight to a new model.
You know, I recently weighed in on the VA healthcare crisis, the so-called VA scandal, with a suggestion that one of the ways that we can save the VA is to use more lifestyle and complementary medicine-based therapies within the VA. They've already hired Dr. Tracy Gaudet, who was head of integrated medicine, I think, at Duke University, and brought her over to the VA to establish a personalized medicine perspective. And with the returning vets suffering from PTSD and traumatic brain injury, depression, high rate of suicide, they might integrate more in the way of natural care. It is a centralized system where, you know, certainly we got nothing to lose because the system isn't working.
Well, I think, again, that's a fantastic example. And I actually talk about Tracy and her work at the VA in the disease delusion. She's a good friend, as she is of yours, and is doing pioneering work. She's an amazing energy focus for change within the VA. I also what Wayne Jonas at the Samuel Lee Institute is doing with the military and implementing with our service women and men that are coming back with many, many different types of PTSD-related symptoms, and how they're integrating these concepts that we're talking about in functional medicine. And it's happening at every level. It's happening in the workplace environment. It's happening in the less medical advantaged areas where people have very serious burden of diabetes and obesity and chronic illness and hypertension, stroke, and heart disease. These models that I'm describing in disease delusion that you've been talking about on your various educational programs for years are the models that are the savior of the system. They are now finally getting into the light of day. We recognize we're not going to solve these problems with a pill for an ill and a new surgical procedure. We must find new methods, and those methods are available, and fortunately, maybe for economic reasons, but whatever the reasons, they're going to happen, and they're happening quickly.
Well, that's a very, very encouraging message. On a slightly different note, you know, you're an ever-ready bunny. You've been doing this for quite a few decades. You walk the walk in terms of a balanced lifestyle. Share with our listeners some of the things you do to stay healthy and well as you continue to be very active professionally. And I won't say how old you are, but you know, we're approximately the same age range.
Well, I would turn that around to you as well, Ron. I mean, you've really walked the talk very well, and I think that's very interesting. When I go to medical meetings with our group, I mean, I'm 68 years old, and when I go to medical meetings with our group and see the senior members of our group and how they're still vital and healthy, and then I go to a medical meeting with a traditional medical group that's doing CME credits in the crisis care model, and I look around and I don't see nearly the composite of health and vitality and energy, and they're quick to want to run out of the meetings because they're tired by the end of the afternoon, and they're...
And those are the 35-year-olds.
Yeah, exactly right. So there's something just on a kind of a observational level that convinces me that there's got to be something right about what we've been talking about all these years. But for me, I think the term balance is the key, is you've got to find a rhythm and a balance. I've traveled 6 million miles over the last 25 years, and, you know, the airplanes can be your enigma with plane food and hotels and so forth. But
so you're one of those guys who got that award, you know, that, you know, like George Clooney in the movie.
Yeah, please don't even use that as an analogy, because I think my wife at times might want to identify, but being too much on the plane. But, you know, it is finding certain rhythms that you can introduce, making sure you got your exercise equipment with you everywhere you go. When you get suffering from jet lag, from getting to a new place, you just immediately go to the gym and, you know, do something for vigorous for a half an hour, and make sure you don't eat a bunch of junk, and keep stuff you know, multicolored in your diet, natural, and try to eat vegetable, you know, and not too much, and modest use of alcohol, not overdoing. And of course, I've never smoked, which I think was a smart decision I made when I was a kid. And then try to really be with good people, thinking good thoughts, thinking about saving the world, and putting yourself to things that are bigger than you, and being with family, and making contributions, hopefully, to the mentorship of your family youth as it starts to grow up, so they keep you young in the process. It's not a complicated formula once you get into the rhythm.
I understand you've taken up stand-up paddleboarding and surf paddling, which is something that I've gotten into.
It's really been fun. You know, as a younger guy back in my 20s.
You used to be a surfer. You're for a Southern California guy, right?
Yeah, Southern California. It was ways where, like so many of us, was my love. And then I moved to the Pacific Northwest to go to medical school.
It's too cold to surf up where you are.
Well, there are people doing it now, even up in Alaska and in British Columbia. But at the time, we didn't have the
They have better wetsuits and dry suits now, I think,
exactly,
than we used to have.
But I did find a group of people now that are all 60-year-old guys and gals that have been surfing continuously since they've been in their teens, and they're much better than I, because they've been doing it continuously, so I'm coming to relearn. But I decided to take up this stand-up paddle-in surfing, which is really kind of fun, because, you know, you paddle into the wave standing up, and now I'm getting to the point, I've been doing this about 2 years again now, and I'm very proud. I'm getting 20 to 30 rides a day now when I go out.
There you go.
And I feel like I'm not the master of the waves yet, but at least the waves are not killing me like they were the first one I was relearning. So I'll tell you, it's good exercise. There's no question.
Yeah, that's a good way to go for sure. So balanced lifestyle, what type of supplementation do you engage in? Or is it, we'll need another 40 minutes probably to recount the various supplements you take. But what are some general recommendations from your own personal experience?
Well, I start probably exactly what I talk about in the book, The Disease Illusion, with a good, well-balanced multivitamin mineral every day. I take fish oils.
And we're not talking about one a day, or Centrum.
No. This is a very complex, balanced, kind of rich formula that with the source of nutrients being what I would consider as natural as possible.
And you would have to take more than one pill a day to achieve your goal in terms of your multiple humans.
Yes.
This is the kind where you might take four or six a day.
That's right. It's four a day, and I take two in the morning, two in the evening, and then take about 3 grams a day of EPA DHA mixture, omega 3 fatty acids. I take a very high potency antioxidant that has lipoic acid, coenzyme Q10. N-acetyl cysteine type formula, and then I'll take other things as may be needed based on the state of my health or the kind of environment that I'm in. But that's kind of my base program.
Mm-hmm. And you're a big fan of vitamin C, having worked originally. One of your original jobs was with Linus Pauling, working at the Linus Pauling Institute.
Yeah, I was universally infected with the vitamin C concept by my 2 years I spent as a research director at the Pauling Institute back in 82 and 83. So I believe very strongly that vitamin C has benefits way beyond the prevention of scurvy when taken in higher levels.
And I think you're also a fan of probiotics as well?
Yeah, I'm a everyday morning kind of breakfast drink guy that has pre and probiotic component of that to get a good healthy dose of 3 to 4 billion friendly bacteria every day.
Okay, so that sounds like, we in this field, we have to be exceptionally cautious because if we go downhill, it's just reflects very poorly on the movement. So it's our patriotic duty to stay healthy and have a long and fruitful and productive career. And you certainly have exemplified that. The latest book, The Disease Delusion, Conquering the Causes of Chronic Illness for a Healthier, Longer, and Happier Life. Dr. Jeffrey Bland, our guest today, and this is part two. You can go back and listen to part one. Thank you once again for joining us today, Jeff. And congratulations on the book, and also congratulations on a very, very wonderful career, which has been so beneficial to so many practitioners out there and indirectly through the thousands and thousands of patients that they've impacted through your inspiration.
Well, thank you, Ron. I want to say the same thing to you. You've been a model for me. We've been really great colleagues over these last many decades. And, if we are most effective when we're speaking by example, you're the exemplar for what this movement is all about. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.